This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
How you doing, man?
Great, Jim. How are you?
I enjoyed dinner with you last night at Slice Vestavia, our proud sponsor.
No, you guys have a date?
Brown wasn't there. It was Cole, me and our wives last
night. Oh, the wives were there.
It was good to talk a little football with Cole. We didn't talk about football.
Yeah, we had fun. I tell you, that place is impressive. So it's the food was fantastic, but a wonderful setting to just hang out and watch a couple games, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll ask you this, what seems to be a question ESPN's asking everybody right now. Is Alabama's success bad for college football? When you hear that question, does that make you bang your head against the wall, or is it a valid question?
Until you see ratings dip in games involving Alabama, I don't think it can be even part of a reality, to be honest with you. I mean, as long as people are still drawn to what they're doing, then I think it's a good thing for the game. It's a good thing for the sport. Now, I understand some people saying that they would like to see other teams have success and other teams have a chance to win a championship. That's understandable, but a couple people who feel that way is I don't believe the norm across the board. So, until you watch an Alabama LSU game or an Alabama Auburn game or an Alabama in a playoff or SEC championship game, until you see a massive ratings decline and some people attribute that to Alabama being a part of that game, I don't think it's something that can be mentioned as very realistic.
Cole, look, I know the competition hasn't been outstanding, but when you look at Clemson over the last 4 weeks, they have won by an average of 60-9. This team seems to be playing as well as anyone outside of Alabama. I mean, once we get into January, do you not believe, I know we've already anointed Alabama the best team in history, and I mean, they're playing like that, but Clemson seems to be a team, when we get Alabama-Clemson part four, seems to be a team that could actually beat Alabama.
I'm impressed with what they're doing, Lance, and I think they've continued to improve, especially on offense. I think the separation that their receivers are finding a way to get is impressive, and Trevor Lawrence and how he gets rid of the football and the throws that he's able to make is pretty impressive, but I still think that he's limited. And I know people look at the numbers and how many points they score and say, well, there's no way their quarterback can be extremely limited. But I think the reads that they're asking him to make, the reads that he's capable of making when he were to get in a certain setting on a team that has more time to prepare, could be troublesome for Clemson. And with that particular matchup, you look at it and say, okay, Clemson might be able to get pressure with four, which would afford them the luxury to have extra defenders on the back end of that defense. That could help them some. Do I think Clemson could beat Alabama? No. Number one, I don't think they have anybody who can block Quinnen Williams. And I think he could wreck their game plan just like he wrecked Ole Miss and Missouri and LSU's game plan. So that's one of the reasons I'm excited about this game this weekend. I think Elgton Jenkins versus Quinnen Williams is a heavyweight title fight. That's the matchup that I've been waiting to watch for a long time. That's maybe the best center in college football against the best defensive player in college football. So Clemson has some areas in which they match up. I don't know enough about their back end of their defense, Lance, because I don't study that because I don't know it like a lot of other people do. But I don't believe that they're on the same level that LSU and Georgia are. And we saw LSU's group still sort of get exposed. And if you don't have guys that can cover, you literally have zero chance against Alabama. You have to at least be able to cause some problems in coverage with one-on-one situations. If you don't have that, then you can just forget it.
Alabama's last two rush games, Cole, 218 on the ground, 281 on the ground, very impressive at LSU. They've also been games where Deontay Brown has been the consistent starter at guard. Coincidence, or is Deontay Brown making that big of an impact?
I don't know if he's making that big of an impact. I mean, he's a good player, and he's played well. He has a little more power. He gets a push, but, I mean, Lester Cotton could move guys around, so I think when you don't bust as many assignments, number one, that's a big plus, a big advantage from your team when you don't have a guy going the wrong way. So that helps. I think number two, when you get a guy that finishes plays and brings a little more attitude, a little more oomph, that's going to help. I think situationally, Alabama's been in a better spot to be able to sort of throttle back and go out and be committed to the run game. I mean, Alabama could have been good running the football all year. I think they've just been certain spots that they've picked recently where they've been more committed to running the football, and therefore you've seen the numbers increase.
Cole is with us every week, brought to you by
our friends at JD Spirits. They're featuring that Pendleton whiskey. Pendleton is barrel-aged Canadian whiskey that is cut with water from Morgan's Fort Hood. This whiskey has an uncommonly smooth taste and rich, complex flavors. Stop by JD's right there in Tuscaloosa to try a bottle of the Pendleton Straight or the Pendleton 1910 Rye Whiskey.
You have covered Kentucky a lot on their rise the last couple of years for your job on the SEC Network. It did not go the way they wanted to on Saturday. What does that mean for the rest of the year for them? Do you think they're able to bounce back from that loss, or is that a hangover they're going to have to fight against?
No, I think they can bounce back. I know the attitude and the demeanor of that team. They have good leadership. Benny Snell, Josh Allen, Cash Daniel, Jordan Jones, Chris Westry, Mike Edwards. Those are guys that have played a lot of football. C.J. Conrad, Bunchy Stallings, Drake Jackson. They're a veteran-laced team. It's one of the reasons that they're good. I mean, Mark Stoops, that's what he's going to have to do at Kentucky. You get some talent, you get some impact JUCO guys, and you're going to be able to make a run every few years when you have a lot of older guys that have played a lot of football and done it together. So kind of who they are. I think there's a lot still on the line for that football team. And when you look at the schedule, I mean, obviously Louisville is not what they've been the last few years. They got a chance to drum that team. You get to go out and maybe go on a little bit of a run here late and pile up a couple wins and still put together one of the best seasons in Kentucky football history. That's very realistic. So I know it sounds crazy because of what we measure it against, with what Alabama and Auburn have done, but they literally have a chance to put together one of the best seasons in school history. So a lot still on the line. That's a team that has a nobody respects us attitude. They've had it all year. They're not going to lose that now. So I think they still go out with plenty to prove.
You know, I don't know what the numbers are in SEC history, but typically when you outrush a team 201-47 and you have a double-digit lead with under 6 minutes to go, you typically close those games out. I think you're a Jimbo Fisher fan, but go back to Saturday. How did A&M actually lose that game?
Well, they turned it over late and allowed Auburn to hang around in a game at home with a quarterback that's capable of making plays, and he did. So I thought they had the plan to do everything they needed to do. They devised a run scheme that worked and got going early. They have an elite front seven that completely shut down Auburn's rushing attack. And by doing so, you thought that they had game in hand. And no reason, in my opinion, to put the ball in the air late in that game. They decided to, and it's one of the things you get with Kellen Mond right now. He's a guy that still makes some bad decisions every now and then, and that was one of the more costly decisions that he's made in quite some time. You get a couple of big plays, not only from Stidham to Williams, but the third and two to Ryan Davis, excuse me, was just
big difference. I mean,
for him to be able to make that play at that time was a total difference maker in the game. So I think Jimbo would probably call it different, Lance, if he had it over again.
Cole, you can hear him on Three Man Front coming up when we're finished here, and also see him on the SEC Network and the ESPN. He's on the Bud Light Hotline. A lot of people responding to that game, Cole, have said, well, Auburn's game plan going to Athens should look more like those final two possessions. I mean, become a pass team. You're not really an effective run team right now. To that, you would say what?
That we've only been saying it since week one.
Yeah, I mean, but is that a winnable – do you think it's a winnable strategy in Athens and in Tuscaloosa to play that way?
It's going to be a little more difficult in Athens because that secondary is so good. But I still don't – I mean, I don't know if there's a team on the schedule that Auburn's just going to be able to go run the ball against. I mean, there's not many teams in college football that Auburn's just going to be able to go out and say, oh, let's run the ball today and go 45 carries for 242 yards. It's just not going to happen. It's not who they are. They're not good enough to do that. So the only way to do that, in my opinion, is to essentially run the ball through the air, quick ball distribution, quick throws, utilize your talent at wide receiver and quarterback. And I think you saw a little bit more of a Chip Lindsey influence late in that game. And if they take that through four quarters, then maybe they have a chance to be successful against Georgia.
Florida lost this week to Missouri, a rare big game on the road against a quality opponent from Drew Locke. For Florida, though, now down the stretch here, they've got a winnable game with Florida State. You know what's left in their schedule. How does Florida end, and what's the overall feeling of that program going into the offseason after Dan Mullen's first season there? Because at one point going into the cocktail party, it was nothing but roses and rainbows.
Well, it should be a positive vibe going into the season. I mean, obviously, you could melt down here late and lose to South Carolina, lose to Florida State, and all of a sudden things don't look good at all. But they have a couple winnable games left on the schedule, finish strong. And I think they're ahead of where a lot of people thought they were going to be, realistically where they're going to be. They've got to get some offensive linemen in. Dan's going to need a different quarterback. Emory Jones still has two games to play. He's going to play him in two games. He's going to get his four in, so you'll see him play some more. I don't know exactly when it's going to be. I would assume one would be the bowl game. That should be the safe assumption because you give him practice time to prepare and then see what he can do and maybe he has more at his disposal. But they need leadership, honestly, guys, especially on offense. The offense just doesn't have any leadership, and they're going to have guys that step up, take command, can run an offense, can manage a game plan. If they don't find that anytime soon, then the thing's not going to begin to turn around at the rate that a lot of Florida fans want it to. But I think you should be happy with what you've seen because I think with guys who aren't capable of doing everything that coaching staff wants them to do, especially at quarterback, especially on the offensive line, they still managed to pile together some good wins.
Michigan, Georgia, neutral site. Who you got?
Man, I don't love Michigan's offensive line, but I think Shea Patterson and that offense are growing each and every week. And I think Jim McElwain and Pep Hamilton and Jim Harbaugh deserve a lot of credit for how they've sort of put that thing together and begin to grow it more and more. I think they could have minimal success on the ground. I think Shea Patterson would help that. I think they could cause some problems against the Georgia offense, honestly, because I think physically they match up well up front and they're pretty good on the back end. I think athletically I'd probably still lean Georgia. I think it'd be a hell of a game, though. I haven't had that matchup posed to me, and now that I think about it, I think it would be pretty tight. A lot of it, Lance, would be kind of the same thing when I talk about this Alabama-Georgia matchup in the championship game. How healthy is the Georgia offensive line? Because it looks like they're getting Ben Cleveland back. Lamont Galliard goes out against Kentucky. How healthy is he? Andrew Thomas, I think, has left three different games this year, so he's been banged up. Are they back close to full speed and 100% healthy? If they are, that's probably advantage Georgia because I think that gives them a bit of an edge against a really good Michigan D-line. But Don Brown's done as good a job as any defensive coordinator in college football with that group. So it could be a really intriguing matchup. I might slightly lean Georgia.
Cole is on the Bud Light hotline. Don't forget to join Jocks for Bud Light game night, 5 to 7 Thursday at Top Golf. See him on the SEC Network and ESPN and hear him when we're finished here with Three Man Front. Thank you, Cole. It's always great talking with you.
Always get Lance's Lock on Twitter at TheLanceTaylor.